finally, Mahaprabhu's telling them, I need your permission to go. And it's a very important point that in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, we're told to properly understand Krishna conception. Janmad yasya yatonvayad itaratas cha arteshu abhigya swarat. Swarat means he's, and as Guru Maharaj would quote Hegel, Hegelian terms, reality is for itself and by itself. He's completely independent and free to do whatever he likes. The Absolute must have that position. Otherwise, he would be secondary. He wouldn't be in the position of the Absolute. But that Absolute, Krishna, in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, in the Durvasa Muni Ambarish Maharaj pastime, he at last declares, Ahang Bhakta Paradino Yasvan Tantra Iva Dvija. He said, although I'm independent, in the presence of devotion, in the presence of my devotees, it's as if I lose my independence. I become dependent on them. So Rupa Goswami, in the book of devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he's saying, what are the symptoms, characteristics? Kleshagni Subhada Moksha Lugutagrit Sandra Nandivisheshatma Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa. A drop of Krishna Bhakti Rasa is so powerful. A drop of devotion in the heart of a devotee, in this case, will take as finite, is so powerful, it's capable of attracting all attractive Krishna. In other words, he finds it irresistible. Told in the Bhava Bhakti stage, that's when the Bhakti Lata Bij has sprouted and flowered, right? The blossom. It's now giving off some fragrance that Krishna finds appealing. So he would say, although they would say, oh, you're completely free to move as you wish. He said, but I need the approval of my devotees. Right? So sometimes Guru Maharaj would say that the will of the Vaishnava is supreme. Well, tell you, Krishna's will, we say Krishna Icha, the will of Krishna. We hear devotees say this all the time when they're contemplating to do something, not to do that, or what will happen. No, Krishna Icha. Well, what is the will of Krishna? But the secret to this is the will of the Vaishnava. If that is there, then we can understand Krishna's will is in the background. Anyway, at last they allowed Mahaprabhu to go to Vrindavan, and arriving there, we're told that before Jagannath, his ecstasy was unlimited, but as he started moving towards Vrindavan, it increased 100 times. When he arrived in Vrindavan, 100,000 times, the intensity of Mahaprabhu's ecstasy, this Kahan Krishna Prananath Murali Badan Kahan Karun Kahan Pan Brajendranandan. So he wants the darshan of Gopal and Govardhan. But at the time, Gopal's in a little temple on the top of Govardhan Hill. But Mahaprabhu, he is in Bhakta Bhava, Radha Bhava, Duti Subalita. He's enveloped the heart and halo of Radharani, taking himself as a devotee. He doesn't want to climb the Govardhan. He wants to see Gopal, but he, as a devotee, he won't climb Govardhan, taking that to be the body of Krishna. When he, like we have Giriraj, or Giriraj has us, as the case may be. When Mahaprabhu got and found Giriraj, he embraced the Giriraj Govardhan deeply as Krishna himself. So how can he walk on Govardhan? So the Lord devises a plan in the hearts and minds of men that they find out a few days before that, how shall we say, the people who had invaded India, there was some threat from them. So they took Gopal from Govardhan and they hid him in the house of different devotees, sometimes here, sometimes there, in one place called Gantuli Gram, where it's alleged that Radha and Krishna met, and to hide themselves, they tied their cloth together. The Ganta means a knot. Anyway, so Gopal, he came down from Govardhan Hill to this place so Mahaprabhu could have his darshan. And what were we told there? Mahaprabhu liked to quote this verse that's spoken from the perspective of the Braja Gopis. If we look in the Srimad Bhagavatam for different slokas there, we should be careful to note who is speaking these verses. Right. Even verses that are apparently glorifying the cowherd boys, Vrindavan, and other things. From whose mouth is the verse coming? So the sloka that Mahaprabhu quotes to glorify Govardhan is actually spoken by the Braja Gopis themselves. It says, Hantaya Madhulabala Haridasa Barja Yadrama Krishna Charana Sparasha Pramoda Manam Tanoti Sahago Ganayas Tayoryat Pani Yasuya Vasakanda Rakanda Mulai. They're praising Govardhan as Haridas Barja, as Haridas, the devotee, and not only Haridas, Haridas Varja, the best of the devotees. Oh, Govardhan, you're the best of the devotees. Yadrama Krishna Charana Sparasha Pramoda. When Krishna and Balaram are walking on Govardhan, they are, not Mahaprabhu, but when they're walking on Govardhan, herding the cows, and saying the touch of the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram are making Govardhan very happy. Pramode, very ecstatic at the touch of their lotus feet. And the cows, and reciprocating by providing, like, ha-paniya, paniya suya vasakandara kandamu, sweet water, nice grass for them to graze. All the paraphernalia necessary for their divine play and pastimes. And they also mention, Manam tanoti sahagauganiyastara pani yasuya vasakandara kandamulai. And besides the lakes and ponds, there are caves, which are an allusion to their own pastimes. But they're praising in that way the best of the devotees. So Mahaprabhu was very happy to get Gopal's darshan. Then Gopal stayed a few different devotees' house, went back. And then Mahaprabhu discovered Radha and Shyamakunda he's omniscient, of course, abhigya, he knows everything. But in the mood of a devotee, he's searching. We're told one of the instructions Mahaprabhu gave Rupa and Sanatan was to excavate the holy places. In the course of time, they were lost. We're very fortunate now because the Goswamis and their followers commemorated these holy places and sites of great pastimes by building beautiful temples there so we can go on parikrama and see them. But at the time, they're for the most part hidden. So only divine souls can recognize that. So when Mahaprabhu was visiting Govardhan, he was searching for Radha Kunda, asking the people if they knew anything. And they said, oh, we're not sure, but... And they indicated some place and what had become rice fields. And there's like a little pond there. And then Mahaprabhu fell to the ground, realizing this is Radha Kunda, that holiest of holy places. And there he bathed and chanted so many beautiful slokas and praise of Srimati Radharani, which comes back to the initial point, to approach the devotee. So I say, to control the king, approach the queen. If you get the favor of the queen, then king is included in that. So that's the devotional approach. Hare Krishna, to invoke the grace of Srimati Radharani, then Krishna's automatically achieved. So, and I heard Maharaj is going to read something at the request of devotees from Search for Sri Krishna, Reality of the Beautiful. That was Mahaprabhu's mood, Krishnanu Sandan, when this book was being made. We were raised on Brahma Jigyasa, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, the Vedantic aphorism that now that you've achieved the human form of life, you've gone to the 8,400,000, you've achieved human consciousness. What is its unique facility? Brahma Jigyasa, spiritual inquiry. Sukadev says in the beginning to Pariket Maharaj, what is it? Nrinam Shanti Sahasrasa Apashitam Atmatattvam Griheshu Grihamedinam. My dear king, there's thousands of things that people normally talk about, but your question's a good one because it's about the primal necessity, everyone, this spiritual inquiry. But Guru Maharaj, how do you say, tweaked that. He ratcheted it up. He said, Brahma Jigyasa, to inquire about spirit, that is a dry thing. Rather, Rasa Jigyasa, we should inquire about happiness, where to find pleasure and happiness. Sat Chid Anandam, Satyam Shivam Sundaram. That necessarily means Krishnanu Sandan. So Mahaprabhu is saying, Kahan Krishna, Prananat Murali Vanan. He's searching for Krishna. All of those in his line, the Goswamis and their followers, Hey Rad, Hey Braja Devi Ke Chalalite, Hey Nanda Suno Kutaha, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, searching. So here, the search is substantial. Right? The very fact, or in the very act of searching for Krishna, is the substantial thing, and that's what brings us in connection with Krishna's devotees. So, of course, happily we will hear something from the Search for Sri Krishna, Reality of the Beautiful, any part.
Then because I have been asked, then happily I shall read from Search for Sri Krishna, Reality of the Beautiful. And we have here the chapter, Fossilism versus Subject Evolution. And so the following chapter is an excerpt from a conversation between Srila Sridhar Maharaj and neurophysiologist Dr. Daniel Murphy, PhD, who we know very well. Darwin has given the theory of evolution, or evolution, depending on if you speak British or American. Well, go half and
we
half.
We understand British English. Okay. to a certain degree.
So, Darwin has given the theory of evolution, fossilism. That's what he's given. Vedanta has given subjective evolution. In Darwin's theory of objective evolution, matter evolves consciousness. The object exists first, and by its development, life is coming, consciousness is coming from stone. Now he's explaining what is the objective evolutionism of Darwin. So that is objective evolution. Okay. But an object is a relative term. Without the subject, an object cannot stand. So you have to think while you hear. This is Guru.
Subject.
Guru Maharaj speaking, it's of course.
Perceiver. Who's perceiving that object? That is the subject. Again, Guru Maharaj says Gayatri, where he's saying Savitu, means the sun. So we think, oh, it's by sunlight. The sun reveals the objective world or the universe. But he's saying, really, that is a reference to Atma or the soul. Because without the soul to perceive, what is the benefit of the sunlight? So what the sun is revealing, really, by inference, we can take Savitri, the sun, to mean the soul, the object, I mean subject. And Krishna there being super subject.
Then Srila Guru Maharaj continues, the subject is the primary substance, as we understand. Whatever is to be felt is only an idea in the subjective ocean. So the subject, consciousness, is first. The object, the gross, proceeds from the subtle. When a particular potency is handled by Krishna in his form as Mahavishnu, then the material energy begins to move and produce something. Maya jakshena prakritihi suyate sa characharam. The first product is general ego. Then gradually so many plural individual egos emanate from the general ego. The experience of this world develops from ego. When ego contacts the modes of ignorance, form is produced. When it contacts the mode of goodness, the sun and light are produced. When false ego comes in connection with these three modes of nature, a division takes place, and the objects of the senses, the material senses, and the power of sense perception are generated. So, from the subtle, the gross is coming.
Like elsewhere, Gauranga will say, for example, this table, it's hard, it's brown, it has weight, it has length, breadth, height, depth, color, form, but Guru Maharaj will remind us, all of those things are concepts. Color, form, height, depth, weight, hard, soft, they're concepts. So a cluster of subjective concepts makes an object. Add each one of those things together, which are all subjective concepts, a cluster of them makes an object. So this and the whole objective world, he will say, is like an iceberg floating in an ocean of consciousness. So consciousness is the primordial substance.
So from the subtle, the gross is coming, and that is Vedantic evolution from subtle to gross. But the Darwin theory says that from the gross, the subtle is coming. That's Darwin's theory. And at present, people are fond of the Darwin theory that stone produces consciousness. Darwin's objective evolution has swallowed us. Although externally we reject it, we hate it, still the ghost of Darwin's theory has devoured everyone. Therefore, it is difficult to make them understand that consciousness is more valuable than stone. It is easy for consciousness to produce stone, but it is difficult for stone to produce consciousness. Consciousness is more valuable, stone is less valuable. So a more valuable thing can produce a less valuable thing. But it is difficult to explain how a less valuable thing can produce something more valuable. The material scientists think that the subtle proceeds from the gross. This is upside down. It is just the opposite, not fossil fatherism, but godfatherism. Their theory is fossil fatherism. The fossil is the father of everyone. The scientists believe that everything moves upward. This is incorrect. It is coming down. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, verse 1. Udva mulam adha shakham ashvatang prahur avyayam chandang siyasya parnani yastang vedasa vedavit. Quote, the tree of this material world has its roots upward, while its branches extend downward. The leaves of this tree are the Vedic hymns. One who understands this tree and its origin is a true knower of the Vedas. Close quote. So, according to Vedic knowledge, everything moves from up to down, not from down to up. And Maharaj, as you know the true meaning of the Vedas, could you help us to understand about the upside down tree, inverted tree?
Sometimes, I mean, for a visual, there's the banyan tree. We see them in India. There's always a little shrine, the Shiva. But they have them here too. In India, they're more obvious though. And what's the one in Navadvip? There's a massive one in Paramatala that encompasses buildings. But it's a tree where you'll see the roots are in the opposite position. And so that's what is basically saying in a simple way is the whole objective world is rooted in the upper world. So we're told, where do you find such a tree? Prabhupada will mention that in his purport, perhaps quoting Baladev. Where do you find a tree like that that's upside down? On the bank of a river, right? Where you're seeing a reflection. So we're told, this world is a perverted reflection of the original. That's what it means by saying, the roots are upward. The roots are upward in the conscious world, and it's coming downward into this plane. So the perverted reflection indicates that everything we have here has some representation in the original. But how? That we have to consider. What do we find in this world? Male and female, gender. It's a mistake to denature the origin. If we find in this world inescapably there's gender, male and female, and neuter, then it has to have some representation in the original. Right. So it means, it reminds me when I was flying from Beijing to New York on Air China. And sitting next to me was a professor, a computer scientist from one of the major universities in America. And he was the professor teaching postgraduate computer science. And I thought, this is a great opportunity to ask him a few questions. So I said, being the scientist that you are, can you say with absolute certainty that, for example, the original source of all fragrance has no olfactory capacity? The original source of all fragrance can't smell anything. Can you say that with absolute certainty? And he said, the way you've phrased this question Can I say that with absolute certainty? No, I can't. I said, then I don't actually have to ask you the other questions, because they're all similar. Can you say that about that the original source of all visual phenomena cannot see? The original source of all sound cannot hear? The original source of all taste or flavor can't taste anything? So what you've acknowledged, at least theoretically, is the possibility of the personality of the original. Saraswati Thakur would like to say the personality of Godhead, right? Prabhupada, the supreme personality of Godhead. So if we find so much variegatedness in the reflection, then it must have its place in the original. Guru Maharaj would sometimes joke about the Mayavadis when they say that this is all an illusion. Everything here, it's all an illusion. And Guru Maharaj would sometimes say, then who are you preaching to? That happened to me at the Mott. We were talking to this one man, he's telling that thing like, I think all everything, you included, are just, you know, it's all just my projection. I said, then why are you talking to me? And can you control what I say to you? What if I disagree with you? Even they think that's funny. So the original, janmadyasya yataha, the Bhagavatam begins with that aphorism, which is a Vedantic aphorism. So we can understand what was given in Vedanta is going to come again in the Bhagavatam. Only how? What does it say? Garuda Purana, Gayatri Basya Rupo Sho Vedarta Paribringhita. But before that, anyway, it says that the Srimad Bhagavatam, Gayatri Basya Rupo Sho Vedarta Paribringhita, it's the actual commentary, or you could say explanation of Vedanta. So the Vedanta is telling us, janmad yasya yataha, the absolute truth is from which everything is coming. Well, that's a sutra, but there's a lot compacted there, right? So if it's the source of everything, and here we find male, female, gender, then it must, being the source of that, also possess such qualities. So Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, in his explanation of this sloka in the Bhagavatam, he said, janmad yasya janmadi, the word adi is used, means janma, etc. Like the Upanishads say, yato va imani bhutani jayante, the absolute truth, divinity, can be defined as that from which everything is coming, by which it's maintained, and what it will ultimately enter into. But Chakrabarti Thakur says here, this adi is indicative of adi rasa, mukya rasa, madhura rasa. It's the source of everything. That source of every, we want to know what are the qualities and characteristics of that source that's generating everything. And so we're told here, it's actually madhura rasa, right? And which implies erotic principle, erotic potential. The whole world, as observed by Freud, is being, spinning. Erotically, the erotic principle is driving material existence. Right? One scientist, sort of tongue in cheek, in a humorous way, he made the observation, realizing the absurdity of what he was saying. He said, "Are we nothing more than promiscuous chemistry?" That's objective evolution. We're nothing more than promiscuous chemistry. Even he realized that that's really, if you follow this, that's what it's saying. Or Guru Maharaj makes it, mocks it even more by saying, stone-producing consciousness. Right? When he says, fossil fatherism, that everything's coming from the fossil. That's his mock, meaning the stone is producing everything. Right? Stone is generating consciousness, or can consciousness, through, as we told, collective clusters of subjective concepts produce objects. So, Madhura Rasa, we generally hear, you know, Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhura, divided into Swakya, Parakya. We think it as a gradation, one developing to another. But Guru Maharaj is, again, from up to down, then we can understand, actually, Madhura Rasa is the original. And from that, everything else comes out. Vatsalya, Sakya, Dasya, Shanta. Sometimes he will say, they are clients of Madhura Rasa. And his Gayatri explanation, saying, where he says, Bhargo Bhai, Vrishabhanu Jatma Bhivavai, Karadana Sri Puram. Sri Puram, the whole spiritual world is a construct of Srimati Radharani in this sense, for the service of Krishna. All these possible relationships are springing from that plane. This is good news for everyone. Muktir hit vanyata rupam swaropena vyavastiti. That after this world, after our engagement and bondage and mundane existence, if one becomes liberated, does that mean tabula rasa, a blank slate, or merging into a gender neutral existence with no possibility of relationship? Prabhupada points out in his purport, he says, really, by Mayavad, this type of Mayavad philosophy, it's indirectly giving impetus for mundane relationship. Because we will conclude, as people think, the only place you can have a relationship of any kind, of the five we mentioned, of any kind of relationship, is here. This is one of the reasons that Narada was so-called chastising Vedavyas. He said, you haven't given the people an understanding that there's a prospect for divine relationship after liberation, in the liberated world. Srila Guru Maharaj, so many times he liked to remind us that in the Nath Mandir of the Chaitanya Saraswat Mat, when Srila Swami Maharaj Prabhupada's disciples came, and there was a nice group, and different devotees were being asked to speak. One lady, senior lady disciple, was asked to speak. And Guru Maharaj's question was like, say basically what you like about Krishna consciousness. I mentioned to Madhusudan Maharaj before we came down here that one Bengali girl in Calcutta who visits the mat there, I asked her once, what do you like about Krishna consciousness? She said, everything. I thought, that's a really good answer. She said, I like all of it. But this time when Swami Maharaj's disciples were there in the Nath Mandir, the lady said, what I like most is that we're being given the opportunity of having a family life with Krishna. And that melted Guru Maharaj's heart, because without all of this Vedantic philosophy and subjective evolution of consciousness and the Upanishads and the Vedas and the Bhagavatam and the Uttarakhanda of the Padma Purana, we love these things. We like that too. We like everything. But, as Gurudev liked it, a simple-hearted one, she got it. What was the essence of Krishna consciousness? Is that you can have a loving relationship with Krishna. And that's Muhyanti Yatsuraya. That's bewildering not only to Stephen Hawking, Albert Einstein, Isaac Newton, but Muhyanti Yatsuraya. Even the devas are can't get their heads around it. Brahma can't get his four heads around us. Nomijite Brahma Puse Taridambaraya Gunjava Tangsa Paripichala Samukaya. The Supreme Reality, he wears gunjamala and a little peacock feather in his head and sits with his cowherd boyfriends on the banks of the Jamuna eating, you know, fruit salad. He said, I can understand that Vishnu, Yastu Narayanam Devam, you know, Brahma Rudrani Deva, Narayan, four arms, the crown, Lakshmi Devi, the Vaikuntha, that sounds like God to me. But that this boy, who's got a stick in his belt for herding cows, you know the stick, it's only a little stick. If you've seen in India, they tap them. The ones who really have it down, who've mastered it, they're just tapping. Yeah. So Krishna's got a stick, not a jeweled scepter sitting on a throne. He's got a little stick, a bamboo flute. He's sitting having lunch with his friends. They're playing. They're stealing one another's lunch. When they leave in the morning to go cow herding, the cowherd boys come to Nanda Bhavan. Yashoda's dressing Krishna, and the cowherd boys, they all want to see, watch everything. So they're watching Krishna get dressed by Mother Yashoda, and Krishna takes his flute and hits one on the head. Oh! But they're saying, it's fun. The playful absolute, Deva, sometimes generally means God, but also means playful. He's playful, the sweet absolute. We like to play, right? Little children like to play, to sing, to dance. You can see those little babies. They come in a short time. They're singing, they're dancing. There's a lot of playfulness. Only you cry later. Oh, they're crying too, or something. But you understand the point. This tendency, this is very beautiful. Yathaganam natyagamanam api bhangshi priyasaki. In the spiritual world, all movement is dance. Why? Reality, the beautiful. The ultimate reality is beautiful. You won't read that in a science book. Someone will say, no, there's an elegant universe and these things are very beautiful. That's another thing. That's like the beauty of wonder. Adbhuta. Wonderment. That's also a type of beauty. But when we say reality, the beautiful, means beautiful, personally beautiful. Playful. Sweet. Loving. Affectionate. Can you imagine reading in a science book and saying, oh, the supreme reality is extremely affectionate. Infinitely affectionate.
We have that in our science
books. In our science books.
The science books.
Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Right? Mahaprabhu told Rupa Goswami, it's an ocean. Oceanic love. And affection is our Krishna. I can't describe, I'll take one drop, but one drop of that love is infinite. And we recall Hari Charan Prabhu, when you have the meetings and different groups of devotees come from different mats on some day, and the leading brahmacharis and sannyasis, they'll be asked to say something. As you may recall, Hari Charan Prabhu always, wherever he started, he always ended with Ek Bindu Jagat Dubai. he'd quote this line from Charitamritam saying, Ek Bindu, one drop of this substance, Jagat Dubai, can drown the whole universe. That's how wonderful a substance it is. Bishwam Purna Sukhayate, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur says, when you realize this, what the truth of the matter is, then you realize, Bishwam Purna Sukhayate, the whole world is nothing but ecstatic joy. So where are we? We're back to Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukkha Doshanu Darshanam. Boo hoo! We're crying that the only darshan we have is Janma, birth, death, old age, disease, being riveted to the objective world. There's nothing here for us. One of the poets, who is it? I forget which one, maybe you'll recall, who says, searching for happiness in this world, pleasure in this world, is like looking for water in a desert. Right? Looking for water in the desert. What do you get at best? A mirage. Right? That's what we get. Searching for loving relationships in the world. We get a mirage of Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, Madhura here. The mirage cannot quench the thirst of the heart. Prati anga lage kande, prati anga mor. The heart is searching for its correspondent. Heart needs heart. One of Guru Maharaj's famous sayings, give heart and receive heart. If you give heart to Krishna, Krishna, as an infinite heart, can reciprocate. He said, not like trying to immigrate to England. He said, and at this, I don't know what it was, but it was in the 80s, and Guru Maharaj was saying, now they've become, well, we're seeing 40 years later, the people started realizing, how many immigrants can we accommodate? It's a problem in America right now. They're saying, how many immigrants can we accommodate? Someone else saying, but we're a country of immigrants. And on goes the discussion. Guru Maharaj said, Goloka Vrindavan is not like that. It's not like, well, how many can Krishna accommodate? If he's the absolute, prati anga lage kande prati anga mor, means he's capable of reciprocating every atom of every soul's hankering simultaneously. That's the absolute. He can be nothing less than that. So when that lady said that we're being given chance to have a family life, loving relationship with Krishna, that is what excites me most. And that's what pleased Srila Guru Maharaj. And that's what, this is all, it may seem a little, what's the word? Heady, philosophical, and it is. It's the greatest philosophy, the greatest ontology. But Krishna's the Lord of love. This is all just meant to help us understand that Krishna can reciprocate what our heart is hankering for. We're trying anyone and everything other than Krishna to meet the heart's necessity. Right? We're hardwired to love. That's inescapable. Theist, agnostic, atheist. Everyone is hardwired to love, to search for love, affection, happiness. It's not just, you know, for the hedonist. Well, no, we're the real pleasure seekers. Or I say the devotees are the real pleasure seekers. They're not, their heart's hankering, that thirst cannot be quenched by any amount of objective consumption. We used to travel all over Eastern Europe and in search of benzene for our car. Benzene, petrol, gas, depending on which country you're from. Okay, I think we got it covered, right? So, and oil. Right? Sometimes a mad search for these things. We've got to keep the machine going. Right? We know how critical it is to the machine. Right? But Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Jantra Rudrani Mayaya Brahmayan Sarabhutani. Yantra Rudrani Maya. The soul situated on a machine. The Russian word for car is machine. That much I know. It's the soul situated on the machine. Yeah, the machine, it has certain requirements to be a functioning machine, right? But we should not mistake that those things that the machine requires, they're going to give satisfaction to the passenger. Right? Atma, the soul, the how can, if we accept this objective, subjective thesis being put before us, how can any amount of the objective world satisfy that which is subjective by nature? Right. We know without a lot of philosophy, without a lot of analysis, that we are conscious beings. We know that much at least, like Descartes, cogito ergo sum. That you know that you can think about yourself and other people, that indicates that you exist. When Guru Maharaj was in Badrinath, he had a migraine. So he's like lying in the bed with a migraine. In the next room were some devotees and some guests having a discussion. And one man said, Guru Maharaj overheard him saying, well, you're making a case for the existence of the soul. He said, but I doubt that the soul exists. I doubt that God exists. And they keep going back and forth, man. And the Bhagavatam, incidentally, says, this argument will go on forever. You bring your slokas, I'll bring mine, and we can have this argument forever. It's what it needs to say. There are no facts, there are only interpretations. So we've got one interpretation, someone else has another interpretation. But Guru Maharaj is hearing this, and he's got a migraine. But then he tells the devotee, bring that man. They bring the man into his room. And Guru Maharaj said to him, the man who said, I doubt the soul exists, I doubt that God exists. And I said, does the doubter exist? Who doubts? Does the doubter exist? Then, if you're reasonable, except for the friend who told me, no, you're all just projections. I said, so who are you talking to? A reasonable person will say, yes, the doubter must exist. Now we've come to the soul platform. The soul that's capable of belief, doubt, confusion, cognizance, awareness, who can feel, who can hanker. That the soul has this potential. That's what we're trying to address. That need, the necessity of the soul for loving reciprocation. How will that be met? By the objective world? Or in the subjective world? Our contention is in this super subjective world. And just to add this, Guru Maharaj is saying, that means the Paramatma world, the Vaikuntha world, but the highest aspect of it, the super, super subjective world, the Aprakrita Leela of Krishna, Krishnera Jateka Kela Sarvatam Nara Leela, Naravapu Tahara Swarup, Gopavesh Venu, Navakishore Natabar, Naralila Hoy Anurup. Perfect Krishna's human like pastimes. That's what we want. Cannot embrace Brahma, right? The apparently impersonal. You can't embrace the sky, can't have a loving relationship with the sky. It can induce awe, astonishment, but not love and affection. Right? That means necessarily personality. So Guru Maharaj quotes one Bengali poet who said, human is higher than God. Right? So at first people, the humanists say, yeah, see, very nice. He's very nicely expressed here that human is higher than God is product of human imagination. But that's not what he was saying, and that's not why Guru Maharaj is quoting him. He's saying, this Naralila, the human-like conception of divinity is superior to the majestic aspect. That's where it's possible for deep love and affection, relationship, reciprocal love. Yes.
Yes. Back to the book. Srila Bhakti Rokok Sridhadev Goswami Maharaj speaking. Well, speaking.
Oh, and one thing I wanted to say too is that Swarup Damodar Maharaj was a part of some of these conversations. And so he was visiting Srila Guru Maharaj, and he was in charge of the Bhaktivedanta Institute and had the portfolio from Srila Prabhupada to defeat the scientist. And he himself, although a great devotee, was also, by training, education, a scientist, a legitimate scientist from a prestigious university. And so he was, that task was given to him. But he's also a very sweet devotee, and originally from the state of Manipur, and wanted to make a nice temple there. And he did make a beautiful temple there. And once the Manipuri devotees in Navadvipa were going to give the seva of Anu Mahaprabhu to Swarup Damodar Maharaj, and that Manipuri temple. This is an old history. But anyway, he was showing Guru Maharaj's plans for the temple at the time. But Guru Maharaj was hot on the subjective evolution of consciousness, you know. And he said, you are not meant for that type of construction. He said, many can do that. But what you can do, and what Swami Maharaj wants you to do, he said, is build a temple over the tomb of Darwin. So when Guru Maharaj says, we're haunted by the ghost of Darwin, he said, Swami Maharaj Prabhupada wants you to build a temple over the tomb of Darwin. And that's what this subjective evolution of consciousness is. It runs parallel to objective evolution, but with the soul, Atma, as the driving force.
Then we shall read a little further. So the last sentence we read was, so according to Vedic knowledge, everything moves from up to down, not from down to up. Then, matter does not produce the soul. Rather, the soul contains in its one negligible portion the conception of matter. Like an eczema, it is a disease. The world exists like an eczema in a wholesome body, like a disease in a wholesome body. This is the Vedantic understanding. It would certainly be a wonderful miracle if stone could produce the soul. But it is easier and more reasonable for us to think that the soul has produced the conception of stone. In the soul, there are many conceptions, and one conception is that of stone. It is all in the plane of consciousness. But that stone can produce soul or consciousness is difficult, ridiculous, inconceivable, and unreasonable.
Guru Maharaj
emphasizing the point. Rather, it is the opposite. Something like the Berkeley theory, that the world is in the mind and not that the mind is in the world. It is only our deviation from the truth that brings us into this mundane world. How and where that deviation begins is to be thought out, but deviation from the truth has brought us to this false area.
Hare Krishna.
So, consciousness is producing everything. Consciousness is eternal. This world is not eternal. This is a temporary production, and the temporary stone cannot produce eternal consciousness. Pure consciousness is an eternal subject, Nitya Sanatan. It is not a product, it is productive. Ether can produce fire and earth, but the earth cannot produce ether. The subtle is more efficient than the gross. The gross is of secondary importance. The soul, Atma, is of principal importance. The origin of everything must be consciousness. The starting point must begin with the interested party. The soul is endowed with interest, but a stone has no interest, plan or project, nothing of the kind. But there is a plan and a purpose pervading everything, and that is the important thing. According to that consideration, the characteristics of the Absolute, the original substance, should be calculated. An object of limited attributes and capacity cannot be the ultimate cause. Only a thing of unlimited quality and capacity should be taken as the cause of the whole. That is a more reasonable idea. Science should realize this. So there are some who think that science is gradually trying to meet philosophy.
Hare Krishna.
That's a good note to end on, conclude on. Hare Krishna.
And plenty to think about.
Yes.
And plenty to reread. Sentence by sentence.
And in the intro to the Golden Volcano of Divine Love, Guru Maharaj says that, and the Bhagavatam takes us from the world of ontology and philosophy to the domain of rasa, divine love and relationship possibility. Hare Krishna.